Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer, to be joined shortly by my confidant, Jay Kang. Before we get going, I just want to tell you a little bit about our partner, Medium, and their membership program. It's $5 a month, $50 a year. They've got both great writing and audio content. They have audio versions of a lot of their stories, so check that out. Thanks to Medium. You can also read transcripts of this show at medium.com/cointalk. We have a cool show for you today. If you've been listening to the show, you know Jay and I bought in as the market was jet rocketing up. And now the market has more or less crashed back down to the earth. That means that I don't know exactly Jay's portfolio, but I'm kind of sitting around break even right now. And it seemed like a good time for a little post-mortem on our performance as traders, which has been pretty bad, I'd say. So we decided to do an episode about everything that we got wrong as traders during this rise and fall. It was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it.
This episode was taped Monday, March 19th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,498.
Welcome back to the Crypto Cave, Jay.
I'm actually very happy to see that it wasn't flooded by the recent named snow snores that
we had. It's pretty shocking. I would say it's the first piece of luck that we've had in some time. Is the relative dryness of the crypto cave.
I was expecting black mold and
there has been black. When I got this place, there was black mold on the wall. I should warn you, like, never let your child in here.
Yeah, don't. The child should not breathe the air of the crypto cave.
I feel like if we like totally go bust, we should just claim that both of us had like some kind of toxic mold poisoning that was affecting our judgment here.
Who can we sue then under OSHA laws? Do we have to sue
anyone
you?
Who's done an ICO? I would have never bought some of these coins if it weren't for this toxic black mold, which I think is actually a good segue to what I think we should talk about today. So I don't want to say the market bottomed out, but there was some kind of a bottom recently.
We might have to go back.
Okay.
Don't jinx it. Don't jinx it.
The market... I think the term is a double bottom. I think so. We got down into the 7,000s in Bitcoin, and then we came back up a bit, and then went back down into the 7,000s. So I thought this might be a good opportunity to discuss everything that we did wrong on the way up and the way down.
Yeah. So we are closing in on, I would say, almost 10 months, right? Of you and me doing our sort of amateurish and an almost comical version of trading.
Well, and I don't even think about it so much in linear time anymore. I don't think, I've been in crypto for 10 months. I think about, I've been to the top of the mountain and I've come tumbling down to the bottom of the muddy pond below.
So you think of it as an actual hero's journey.
I do.
A narrative arc.
That's how I feel. I feel like there's a narrative arc, and now we're at the point where we've fallen far enough that I'm willing to talk about why we fell so far. I mean, we're going to lose money no matter what during that market crash, but I definitely did much worse than I had to do.
Yeah. So the dragon has been met, and the dragon kicked us off the mountain, and now we're convening around a table with mugs of mead and our trying to tell the tale and reflect on what had happened.
And I was also thinking, I was on another podcast called Track Changes a few weeks ago.
A podcast.
No, I was out there promoting our show. So I was promoting our show, and the two hosts, noted no-coiners, Paul Ford and Rich Ziotti. Actually, Paul is not a no-coiner. He just acts like he's a no-coiner, but he actually has done some mining.
He's a fake no-coiner?
He's like...
Who mines?
he was like mining in like 2009, he told me. He told me at the very end. He was like, so what is Bitcoin? And then I was like, well, and then he was like, yeah, I did some mining before... I was like, oh, okay, you probably know more about this than I do.
I only have 500 Bitcoin.
But something that I talked about with them about was this idea of needing to experience crypto like firsthand to really like wrap your head around it. And I feel like we've embraced that hard in the show. Like we could just be sitting here like reading the news, but we're actually trading, often losing money for the benefit of you, the listener out there.
Yeah, yeah, we have skin in the game.
Yeah, we have skin in the game.
So you hear that, Nassim Taleb? Unblock me on Twitter.
You're blocked by Nassim Taleb on Twitter?
I believe so.
Wow. How are we going to ask? I'll have to ask him to come on the show then. So we've talked about our portfolios before. I'll say at one point I had doubled my money, and now I've lost that whole double and I'm down money. Not a tremendous amount of money, but down a little bit. So I've gone from like 200% to like 80%.
Yes.
Are you on a similar arc?
In muted ways, right? So I did not quite go up 100%, although at some point I think I was at it around.
I think you sold out a little bit faster on the way up, and you also protected yourself a little better way down.
I exited before you did on both ends.
Me and Doug Kim were partying on you when you sold at like 12,000, and I appreciate that you have not been partying on us as we've white knuckled our way all the way down.
Well, first of all, I'm a virtuous and fair man. But secondly, I will say that there is slight difference between saying, haha, you made money, but not as much money as me.
Yes.
And haha, you lost more money than I lost.
Okay. So what do you think is the dumbest thing you did along the way? What was your worst mistake?
Okay. So I have a list of them.
Okay.
So the first thing I would say that I did wrong, which I very, very much regret every single thing, is that I traded at all. Now, if I looked, you know, Coinbase recently put out your records. Like, you can just see them in an Excel spreadsheet. And is nominally for tax reasons. And I was looking way back at my first purchases. You know, like, if I had just held on to them, never done anything, both in Ethereum and Bitcoin, which I, the only two things I bought at the time, a little bit of Litecoin, I think, I would be doing much better. And this is the narrative we hear from everybody in crypto, which is that like they lost because they traded. Now, part of me would just say that I, like you, see crypto as almost an entertainment product, and it's like fun. And you and I have both learned quite a bit about markets and economics through trading. So I don't regret it in terms of where I do feel like the knowledge that I gain is probably more valuable than the actual difference in money.
Yeah.
Because I will have to make financial decisions throughout my life.
I'm going to say I would trade all this knowledge back for that extra double of my money. I would overwrite that part of my brain.
I don't think I would, because I came into it as a complete, like a complete ignoramus, know nothing about anything financial, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've had a lot of fun. I'm just saying it would be fun to get that money back, too.
Yeah, no, but it is a little bit close. I think if I invested for a larger portion of my amount of money I have in the world, that I would probably feel differently. But I do think from a pure financial standpoint, there's absolutely no argument that I would have done much, much better if I had just never tried to time the market, if I hadn't ventured into alts, if I hadn't, I guess, gotten greedy and tried to, you know, I had seen other people who were saying on social media or on Reddit, hey, I turned this into this. You know, somebody like Ian Bylina, who is the guy who sort of invests in ICOs and always shares his portfolio. And I would look at it and I'd be like, God damn it, this guy has like 50 shit coins that he bought. If none of that had happened, I think I would have been better off. So I do regret from a financial standpoint trading at all. And I think that if I just left it alone, it would have been better.
Same. This one I don't even blame myself for, because I feel like I did make a conscious choice that I was going to like sample all of the food at the buffet, which is also something I do in real life. and so I made that decision knowing it was kind of stupid. But I'll say this, like when we were massively up, when you're up 100% in 6 months, you don't go, oh, geez, I would have been up 114% if I had just stuck with my initial bags. When the things come crashing down is when you start going, oh, I wish I had been a little more strategic, because then I would have had a little bit more of a cushion as we fell here. And that's how I started thinking about all of the dumb things I did immediately as my portfolio crossed that, like, break even point. That was the point I realized, like, oh god, like all of these, and I've probably like took it even further than you, because I was dabbling in like the micro caps, etc. Each time we fell in Bitcoin, I had an opportunity to just go, like, to just be like, all right, correct course here. Like, just get everything into Bitcoin. At least from here on out, you're like not going to be doing worse because of trading. Because that's the thing is, like, once you trade, as long as you hold all of those things that you acquired when you traded, you're still sort of in trading. Like, right now, I'm still holding Sumo Coin.
Yeah.
So even though I'm not actively trading, I'm still in like a traded position relative, and I don't know how to get out of that. So I'll throw you back what I think my single biggest mistake was, which is not just trading, but trading without a coherent strategy. Like, I think I have a coherent strategy around Bitcoin, which is to hodl it.
Yeah.
But hodling micro cap coins is not a coherent strategy. I can tell you this from personal experience because I bought Sumo Coin very low and got to experience the great thrill of a moonshot. Was up 7 or 8 times on it. And if I had had a strategy, maybe my strategy would have been sell it when you've doubled your money. Then I would have felt stupid initially, but I would feel great now because now it has crossed back going the other direction. I also didn't have a strategy once it went up 7 times. So I was like, I guess I'll just keep holding it because now I have a lot of it. And maybe if it goes up 10 times more, I'll be in my Lambo.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's just like literally one of the most wrecked coins like around. Like we could not, if I had been like, I want to do for the show a coin that gets really wrecked, a microcap coin, I couldn't have picked a better one than Sumo Coin.
Well, I think that having a coherent strategy and having a sort of valueless look at all of this stuff would probably have been smart for me too. There are certainly projects that I felt that were more legitimate than others. And the reasons why I thought they were more legitimate were completely based on just like bullshit, you know? So for example, 0x, which I think is still a good project, you know?
Yeah.
It was because your friend John Liveoff was in the crypto cave and said, hey, this thing is kind of cool. And I was like, this guy seems smart.
Yeah, we got to have him back on the show.
And then I read a bit more on it. And then I saw who was on the team, you know? Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, this might be a real thing. And also I was too lazy to sell it because I had to buy it on Binance. And it was the only coin I had on that exchange for a long time. I didn't feel like signing in. And so at some point, I think I was up 1,000% on that, you know, and it had this huge surge and then another surge. And then like you, in my head, I was like, oh, this thing is going to go like it's going to be worth like $3 each and I'm going to be rich. And, you know, I think that the point being that you need to kind of exit out of it slowly, you know, and if it keeps going up, then you can buy back in. But these things are so volatile that if it crashes and you're completely wrecked and it takes a long time for it to shoot back up to the point where it used to be. And I think that if I had just been like, look, if in stock trading, you say like if you hit 20% up, then you just auto sell. It doesn't matter, you know? I think that in crypto, like if you 2X, you know, during alt booms, if I had just taken that strategy and just exited every time an alt 2X'd, then I think I would have been done much better. But the problem is that you get confused in your head and you're like, oh, this is a real project. This is not a real project, you know? And these distinctions are mostly fake, I think.
Yeah, I think there's also like a psychological urge to like, you're a poker, you've played poker.
Yeah.
When you've made money, your first inclination is not like, let me take this money off the table and like lock in. I've doubled my money here. Yeah. You're like, well, now I'm playing with twice as much money. Imagine if I do that like 2 or 3 more times, you know? And it's different than stock investing insofar as you can expect these micro cap coins are going to crash at some point. So if you just stay in the water, you're going to get attacked by a shark eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And that happened to me, you know, like, like I think that people maybe misunderstand the technical analysis guys a little bit, like that they think that, oh, these guys think they can predict the future by reading these chicken guts. What they're doing more is they have a strategy for entering at good positions and exiting at good position, these coins. And that requires you to be very active, trade a lot, kind of know what you're doing. And even so, you still probably have a good shot of getting stuck in the water at one of these inopportune times because there's unforeseen things like the Mt. Gox trustee dumping Bitcoin.
But was that even real? I heard that he wasn't really market selling.
Oh, I don't know.
But he was definitely selling. Even if it was a market.
Yeah, I think that I didn't help. Let's say it didn't help.
It didn't help. Okay, so the second thing that I think I made a mistake in, right?
Yeah.
We've both done one now. The second thing I think is that the mistake that I made over and over and over again is that I kept FOMOing into coins based on people on Twitter saying that I should.
Yeah.
And that's an embarrassing... I had to stumble on it because it's an embarrassing thing to admit. But, you know, I have no idea who these guys are, like the guys who do these TA charts. And I think that it is important to say that there is a distinction, right? Yeah. There are people who are take this very seriously, who are doing it as an honest intellectual enterprise. And then there's a whole lot of them who are just shilling and trying to pump coins and making shit up and doing it in this sort of anarchic way where they don't care. You know, they just want to help the coins that they're already buying in. And maybe part of them feel sincere, like, you know, I do think this is a good investment, but if it drags more people into the buy side, then so be it. I think that when everything was booming, you know, and you could literally just pick any coin and there's a 1 in 3 chance that it was going to, like, go up 80% in the next 4 days, you need some sort of guide to try and make you think that you're smart, you know, instead of just randomly picking coins and some of them boom, which is exactly what you're actually doing. And so I think part of the problem that I had was that I started to have some of them that I trusted more than others, you know, and that those people were really driving a lot of my investments.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand TA. I mean, I understand it at a very basic level. Like, I know what a resistance line is, and I know, like, what the Fibonacci whatever are, right? I mean, enough so that I don't even know what it's called. But Fibonacci.
The Jabba Jabba
Jabba Theorem? Postulation?
Yeah, I mean, same.
Yeah, but I found myself trusting these guys more than I should have. And it's fine when the market's going up, right?
Because
but when it's going down or when it's sideways, they can get you in a lot of trouble. And at the, you know, this is a point I think you and I have discussed quite a bit where our investments diverge, which was when Bitcoin was around $14,000 and going sideways, I sold all my alts. I had like 16 alts.
Yeah.
And it was all because of these guys. And I just did it because I was tired of checking everything.
Yeah.
And
whereas I was like following the sideways corn means alt season. Yeah. Where the fuck is alt season?
Yeah, exactly. All these terms seem completely ridiculous now to me. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So I think that saved me, which was I was once again saved by my own laziness. But, you know, there was a period where I was so exposed, you know, and it was because I was listening to so many of these guys.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid once, I told my parents, I was like, you know, advertising has no effect on me because I can see right through it. It's just like, no, you don't. Like, even if you, like, look at Twitter and you're like, these guys are all dumb with the, like, crypto cartoon characters. If you look enough at that stuff, it's going to influence your mind.
Oh, for
there's
sure.
There's just, like, literally other than being that guy who doesn't get any Trump news and, like, lives by himself in Ohio and, like, only watches Cavs games on mute, if you're not that guy and you're, like, on Twitter and you're, like, on crypto Twitter, you're going to be influenced by it, even if you think you're ridiculous. Like, this is something I have learned is that every single piece of information you take in does affect how you trade if you're trading. One of the reasons to not trade is so you can dabble with all of these shit posters and not like actually be influenced by them. And, you know, I was definitely influenced by them. And look, some of them made me money. Like I don't have any like malice
towards
that world, but like everything is pulling you which way. And like, look, if you're at a amusement park, you're going to want to ride all the rides.
Yeah.
You know, if you see a bunch of guys whipping by on a roller coaster and they're like, woo, Dragon Coin. Yeah. You're going to be like, what's that all about, huh? Those guys seem like they're having a good time.
Yeah, the Dragon Coin guys were having a ton of fun for a long time. I was like, yeah, I even looked them up. I was like, ooh, they're in Seattle, huh? Like, that seems like a good party. Look, I agree. I don't give them. I don't have any malice towards them, and I certainly don't think that what they're doing is worse than like what you know, like Bernie Madoff was doing. You know, obviously there's
well, that's a pretty fucking low bar. Yeah.
No. But there's.
I think what they're doing is better than what like Jim Cramer is doing.
Yes,
they're not getting paid for it. They're just doing their thing.
My point being, there's shills and there's fraud.
Yeah.
Everywhere, and for a crypto shill who generally has a pretty good sense of humor. Sometimes very problematic, but you know, who is doing this in some sort of good faith, it's actually better than the financial markets in a lot of ways. So I don't have malice towards them. I just wish I hadn't listened to them so much.
Yeah, and I agree with you that the overall message is probably just don't trade. Don't, like, try to have a strategy within, like, sort of listening to those guys or going against them. The only way you can really ignore them is to not trade, I think. Although I'm going to keep trading because it's fun. But
number two for you, what was it?
Okay, so my number two worst thing, I think this is actually my number one in terms of like how much it actually cost me, was I originally bought in, I think my first buys were in the 3,000 to 4,000 range at Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So at the point I crossed in my break even, I was at like 7,500. I was like, whoa, how did that happen? Like, my break-even point was double my first
somehow
buy.
Somehow traded away like your entire
and
profit.
Basically, what had happened was I had been pumping more money in as we went up because I was like, "Hey, last money I did made me money." I just couldn't get the money in fast enough. Literally, I was just like waiting for Coinbase to move the money into my account so I could immediately buy.
I remember this.
I mean, that felt like it was working while the market was continually going up. I was like, I want to wait a day. I want to get my money in the market. I thought that was good because I thought I was cost averaging.
Yeah.
But what I was ultimately doing, I think, was taking a really good position and gradually making it worse and worse until my ultimate transgression, which was I did buy the very, very top. And I'll tell you that buying even a little bit of 16,000-17,000 Bitcoin will really raise the average on your initial $3,500 buys. And what I should have done was been like, whoa, you got in early, you have a great position, you're gonna have a lot of fun with this position. Don't try and make it bigger, just be like, wow, I did really well percentage wise. You know what I mean? Like, one of the things about when you buy in is you're just setting kind of what your bar is. And I think that chasing the rises with higher and higher buys is just, there's so many ways you can lose in that situation. I would have lost out even if Bitcoin had crashed to 12,000. It would have still been a bad idea.
Yeah.
I think just in general, like my $17,000 buys, it's like, Jesus Christ, what would have Bitcoin had to do to justify those buys? That was the dumbest shit I did. How dare I? What was I thinking? I should have asked you before I did that.
Well,
but I think that's a good number for listeners who would like to learn from our failures. Thinking about what the average of your Bitcoin buys is, I think is really smart. And generally, I would say there's two strategies I can see. I'm interested in see what you think of these two strategies. The first one is you just buy in, you accept where you bought in, and you don't trade. And you don't like keep buying in all ways, and you just like you put your chips on the table and just let them ride where they are. I think that's a very justifiable strategy. I think if you do want to trade and you want to like play this game that we've been playing, the other thing I think I got wrong was you want to leave cash on the sidelines because you don't know whether Bitcoin is no one knows whether Bitcoin is going to go up or down. So if you really want to be able to maximize for all the situations, which is what you should be doing if you're trading. If you're trading, you should be dynamically responding to the market and playing it to your advantage. I just was just chasing it and just buying no matter what. It did not matter where Bitcoin was when the money hit my Coinbase. I just wanted to pump it in. And I should have been holding more on the sidelines for the eventuality that did happen, which was a massive crash that would have been great if I had had half my money on the sidelines. I would have like bought some $7,500 Bitcoin yesterday.
Or $5,800
Bitcoin. But I had already put all my money in with that final $16,900 buy.
I think that's related to the first thing, which was that neither of us had a strategy at all.
Yeah.
Like, so I had a friend who is very smart, and he didn't care about the tech.
Yeah.
He only saw it as a volatile investment. And he said that his friend, who does a lot of number crunching stuff and is very smart and is one of these sort of math whizzes, said, look, if it breaks parabolic form, then you should get out immediately because it'll be very ugly afterwards. But sure, like buy it until it breaks the parabolic arc. And that's exactly what he did. He got out around like 17,000, I think. And, you know, he bought in at like between 6,000 and 7,000. And for him, that's like in a very good profit, you know, and that's the only way that he had thought about it. You and I had no strategy. We were just like, we're going to keep buying until it goes to like 80,000 and then we'll be rich.
And I was thinking also, I think if I had it over again, if you really feel like you're confident in this parabolic and knowing when it's going to break, great. Otherwise, as it's going up and you're getting close to like doubling your money, you should be basically selling on the way up. Like if we know this is a volatile
investment. Taking profits is
Or even if you don't look at it as profits and you just think that you have a US dollar component of your like portfolio that sits in your Coinbase account or whatever, as your investment goes up, if you assume that there's going to be a crash at some point, and me and you, I think, both said we expected at least a 40% drop at some point when we were over 10,000. Well, I should have been selling on the way up. If I really believed in that prediction, I should have been selling on the way up to buy that 40% drop, which turned out to be well more than 40%.
We both got, and look, this is, one of the sort of abiding credos of investing or anything. Like, we just got very greedy.
Yeah,
I mean, we did. We were like buying when at the point where you and I probably had like a combined 35 total shit coins in our bags. That was like the point of things like Tron and everything on Cryptopia were going up like 600% in 4 days. That was a greed flare, you know? Yeah. Like everything has become unmoored and now it's just about greed. And you and I just didn't see it. And, you know, that is one of the informational things or the sort of educational things that I do think was valuable for me to have seen. And that is part of the reason, not to say that I made a great decision, but part of the reason why I did sell when I did a large portion of my portfolio was because I was just looking at like some of the more received information about investing, some of those charts that you see that say, look, this is what a market cycle looks like, and then it's going to pump back up, you know, after it crashes, and then it's going to go back down. And I was like, oh, well, according to this thing, we're here, and I should probably just sell because it'll go back down. And look, in anything in crypto, it's 50-50, or like, you know, at best, you're like 55-45. Yeah. But as long as you have like a set idea, you can at least live with your investment. So like for example, my dad, I think I told you about this, when Bitcoin was around 14,000 or something like that, I was like, are you going to buy any? And he was like, I'll buy it when it crashes to 3, you know?
And I was like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. And I don't know if he would have, but the idea seemed preposterous to both of us. Yeah, but it's still in play. And that
still
very
much in play.
I think that's the difference between, you know, it's not like my father is some sort of investment genius, but he's older and has been through more market stuff. Like, I think that's the difference between being sort of like an older long-term investor and somebody who's like FOMO'd in, right? Which is like, he can see that it doesn't matter if it goes to 3 this year or next year.
Yeah.
You know, he sees some long-term potential in all this and he doesn't want to buy until it's totally cratered out. And the point where he decided that it's cratered out is 3,000. Now, he might be right. Or it could be that 5,600 that we saw a couple weeks ago was the actual like cratered out bottom. But I would say that there's probably like a pretty reasonable chance that we do see 3,000 this year, just as there's a reasonable chance that we'll see like 15,000 again or 20,000 again.
Or both. Okay, here's something that I'm curious what you think about. The two terms that are most crypto orthodox, I believe, would be HODL and BTFD, buy the fucking dip.
Both getting slaughtered right now.
Right, so I think either my embrace of these ideas or my misinterpretation of them is definitely contributed to my poor performance during this crash. Let's talk about HODL first.
Okay.
Because I think HODL is like, when we make the movie about this crypto era, it's going to be called HODL. And I saw someone say this, and it should be obvious to anyone, everyone else obviously, that like, if you were running a Ponzi scheme, the best thing that could happen to you for the people who had bought into your Ponzi scheme is that they HODL. Like, a Ponzi scheme is never revealed if everyone HODLs.
Yeah.
And that's I'm not saying that crypto is a Ponzi scheme, but I am saying that everyone HODLing has like a weird group effect. When I started embracing HODLing, or I started thinking a lot about HODLing, it's like, HODL what? Like, if you're trading, you shouldn't HODL everything. I HODLed Sumo Coin all the way down because I was like, well, just HODL, it'll come back. And I was like, I didn't have a methodology to sell from the top. And my only view on the bottom was like, HODL. I think a HODL is a great strategy if you buy Bitcoin and never trade and HODL it. But that does not apply when you're like buying weird off-brand microcap coins.
Well, I also think it makes sense if you buy in a time of like low volatility, right? So,
is there ever a time of low volatility?
Sure. I mean, like I would say that, you know, the period when it was hovering around 11,000 is like relatively low volatility. I think right now is pretty relatively low volatility. It's been stuck at, like, if you believe that Bitcoin is going to have another renaissance or another push, right? It's not bad to buy at 8,000. There's no real difference between buying at like 8,300 and 7,500 if you're, you know, like, it's really insignificant given the actual ups and downs that take place. And so I think it's fine if you do that and you're just like, well, here is where I'm going to buy and I'm going to hodl until my exit point. I think the problem is that a lot of the, for investors like you or me, or people who are even more casual, right? So the hodl mentality is not just based on the soundest investment advice. It's based on a philosophy to try and destroy the world banking system.
I'm kind of into.
Yeah, so like that's
that's the part of hodling I like.
Yeah, so it's not like, it's basically like you may lose money, but you sure as hell better be dedicated to our cause, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a military command almost, like don't break rank, you know? Don't sell, don't leave. Don't you dare, like, you know, have weak hands and let go right now. And in that way, it makes no sense for anyone who bought into Coinbase on the way up, anyone who FOMO'd in or any of the sort of casual retail investors. It makes absolutely no sense for them because all they want to do is increase their U.S. dollar amount, you know?
Yep.
They're not trying to contribute to hyper-Bitcoinization. So HODL makes sense, I think, if you buy into the philosophy of hyper-Bitcoinization. If you believe that this currency will bank the bankless, that it will destroy the world fiat currency system, if you believe that a deflationary currency is better than an inflationary currency, then you're on a team, you know? Yeah. And that team is headed into, or really, it's more just like a military thing. Like, you're in a platoon, that platoon cannot bail. You know, you can't be the person who deserts it. So everyone has to go towards the battle. Everyone has to have strong hands. They all have to like charge in.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me if you believe that. What it doesn't make sense is if you are somebody who in November of last year was like, holy shit, all I hear about is Bitcoin and everyone I know who was into Bitcoin 3 months ago has made a lot of money. So maybe I will buy some Bitcoin now and make like, you know, like 50% profits and then I'm going to exit, you know, or even like maybe I'll try and make 1,000% profits. But at some point, all this money is going to go back into U.S. dollars. And I don't really believe that it's a good idea that the entire U.S. economy flips over to Bitcoin. Or maybe they don't even know that that's like the end goal, that they just see it as another investment, which I would say is probably the vast majority of retail investors.
Yeah, I don't know if you have to believe in a like world economy flipping to think in terms of Bitcoin value, but it certainly helps.
Well, I think
you have to at least have a long view.
I think, well, I'm more just saying that HODL works for those people. I understand why it's a rallying cry for those people. I don't think it's a rallying cry for anyone else. And look, now there is part of me that thinks that this directly conflicts with the first rule that I said, which is that I wish I had never traded. But I think the way to sort of, I guess, like peg all those three together or like, you know, sort of staple them together in a very messy way, which is to say that like you shouldn't trade based on emotions. You shouldn't try and time the market, but you should have a general exit plan if you want to make more U.S. dollars. And what you shouldn't do is you shouldn't feel pressured by this idea that you have to hold through everything because some guy bought at like $8, saw it go to 200, went down to 40, went back up to 300, crashed back down to 70, and then went all the way to 20,000. Now that guy is rich. Like, that person is into Bitcoin for a different reason than you are, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that.
That you have to kind of figure out what type of investor you are. If you're new into this, most likely you're just trying to make more money. So HODL doesn't make sense for those people at all. And I think that those people should just have very clearly defined exit points.
Yeah, I think I overall agree with you. Like, I think you're describing it as like some people should HODL and some people shouldn't HODL. And the way I think about it is HODLing means multiple things. And emotionally, you're just going to map it to whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous to have like a rule that's like the rule above all rules, but it's like open to interpretation. I'll say the other one, this segues into buy the dip is the other one. And when people tell you to buy the dip, how are you supposed to identify the dip? like the dip is another example of you don't really know what's going to happen with the market. To know that something's a dip, you have to know that you've like bottomed and are coming back up. And the first few times I bought the dip, I did buy the dip. And I was like, yeah, I bought the fucking dip, man. Here's what you got to do. HODL, then buy the dip. As it went up a few times, it was like these little tiny dips that seemed big at the time where I was like, it was at 17,000. Now it's at 15,500. Yeah. Buy the fucking dip, man. Yeah. And those weren't real dips. Those were just down on the way to more down.
Yeah.
And what I did was I fired all the money I had into those dips. And then when the real dip came, I was like, damn it. Like I cried wolf on those little mini dips that weren't even dips. They were just downward trajectory.
Well, that buy the dip mentality, I think, has been popularized a lot more in the last 5 years of the stock market, which has just seen sort of...
Oh, is buy the dip a stock market thing?
Yeah, it's it's just constant growth, right? So
yeah.
If we have a minor correction like we had last month in the stock market, then people would just be like, buy the dip. You know, the S&P is unstoppable. And for people who did that a month ago, they profited, you know, for now at least. You know, if you bought Amazon when it tanked back down to like 1,100 or something like that, it's almost at 1,600 now. So you profited, you know. So that application into crypto would make more sense if we had 5 years of unstopped growth. But since every single timeline in crypto is so compressed, it is very hard to figure out what's a dip and what's a crash. And I do think it was another just sort of rallying cry, one that I also did quite a bit, and one I still actually kind of believe in. But I think that the one thing that has happened in terms of this sort of crash back down from, what, like 19,000 on GDAX down to like 7,000 or 8,000, whatever it is at now.
My final idea on there is just, I didn't know it was actually a stock market idea, but in crypto, like 10, 15, 20%, I would have, if I had a time machine, I'd just be like, dude, that's not a dip. Like in crypto, a dip is like 40-50%. You know, like when crypto's down 50% like it is now, this I would call a dip. None of the times I bought, I think, were actually dips in retrospect.
Yeah. I think I bought one correctly, but then I never exited. So it got wiped out anyway.
Yep.
So like if I had exited at the top of it, then it would have been fine. But, yeah, again, I think that this is sort of what happens when amateurs like you and I become exposed to market terms for the first time. So this is my last one, my last regret that I had. And it's that I wish that I had paid a little bit more attention to psychological factors that were entering in my brain. This is something you alluded to as well, which is that at the very beginning, I started reading books about the ways in which investors behave, right? And some of these things I think are great, and some of them I think are kind of like, you know, crackpot psychology. The listener should know that I am a general skeptic of psychology. So if you are, if you're like, you know, evolutionary psychology, all this stuff, I kind of roll my eyes. But, you know, behavioral economics, which is based on psychology, is something that I was at least interested in. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about in one of the basement tapes, I think, is that, like, there is a thing, the house money effect, right? Where,
huge.
Like, the second that you're up, you start making different decisions because you think you're playing with house money.
Yep.
The second that you're down, you start making much different decisions because you feel like you're down and you either need to get back to even or you don't want to lose, so you're, like, cutting losses at that point.
I would argue that every single mistake we've talked about during this whole show, you could have like talked about that psychological effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Effect
so in. When you and I were up,
yeah,
we were buying all the alts.
Yeah.
You know, because we're like, fuck it, why not? Let's turn this into 50x instead of like 2x, right?
Yeah. And we're also like, oh, boo hoo, like we could have made a little more money if we had stuck in Bitcoin. We're partying.
Yeah, exactly. But the second that it gets hairy and the second where you're like, I will have less money than I started with, then you really start cutting your losses.
Your brain kicks into a different gear.
Yeah, and I would say that if you were smart, that you wouldn't change. You know, that you would be able to identify patterns that work throughout your entire investing and that you would see going down as another opportunity. But I just never got there, you know? Like, I was always just too worried about it. And it's interesting because you can read about these concepts. You can identify them in your own behavior. And this is something I know very well from gambling, which is that when you're stuck, when you're down, like, let's say you're down like three buy-ins at like a, you know, like a 2-5 yeah. limit game, so you're down like $4,000 or something. You play so differently than when you're up, you yeah. know, even like $200 or something
and
like that.
And I don't know poker that well, but my understanding is that there's some people who are very good down players who can play a short stack very well and play well when they're down, and some people who are like, I'm very good at building a advantage and I can potentially win a tournament once I have it, but yeah. I'm never going to like come from behind and win one.
Well, that's tournament play. And I would say that those differences are probably a little bit overstated, but the best players are able to play the same way well,
yep.
you know, and tailored to their competition, regardless of their up or down. So yep. like that's what you want in crypto as well. Right. But I will say that despite knowing all that, despite all my years of experience playing poker, it doesn't matter. Like those forces are so powerful.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
And
10,000 hours of poker does not like make you not freak out when you've lost money.
It should. I think the most powerful force in crypto is probably FOMO. Yeah. The second most powerful effect is the house money effect.
Yeah, the house money effect is very real. Like embracing different strategies when you're up and down is basically the like worst thing you can do, and a very clear way to do it. And this brings it around to my final mistake is I think I was overexposed. I think I had too much money in there. And what that meant was that while I was up, I was like partying. And when it came down, my strategy changed because I was trying to preserve my money. Yeah. And I think that the only way around that is to really, truly put in an amount of money that you don't mind losing. I mean, I know we've talked about like, oh, like don't put in more than you can afford to lose. But to me, I was always like, well, Bitcoin's not going to zero. So in my opinion, I probably put in twice as much money as I should. And in my mind, I was like, if I'm down 50%, I can sell out, and then I've lost that amount I can afford to lose. So I kind of put in maybe twice as much as I wanted to lose, which was working out fine when we were up, because I was like, I'm glad I put in more money, you know? And once we crossed over the break-even point, I just started like worrying too much about it. Like it gave me anxiety. It like I like had to like look all the time,
yeah.
and I started just getting very itchy. And it's like that was when I was only down like 10%,
yeah,
right. So like, Lord only knows what I would have been like, you know, down 50%.
Sure.
I think that putting in less money, you know, what I should have done was the opposite. I should have put in half as much money as I could afford to lose, and that would have left half on the sidelines that I could do or play whatever. I think this is a poker thing also. Like, if you're trying to break even, you're not going to play poker very well.
Well, you should just not play poker.
You should just not play poker. Yeah. You really want to be able to play with every chip that you have on the table. And I think that once we got closer to break even, like, I had sold some. I sold some at, like, $11,500, which was like, yeah, I did. Good job. That was smart, right? Clearly, what I should have been doing was firing at 7,500. You know, I should have been buying down and lowering my average. On the way up, I was very happy to raise my cost average. But once it was down, I was not as aggressive at buying when it went down.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, like, that's where it really does help to basically what some trading experts tell you to do is just do the opposite of what your feelings are telling you to do. You know?
I don't even know what my feelings are telling me to do. But I do think having less money in there actually would like allow me to play a better game. So I think going forward, I would be inclined to make a smaller investment and play that hand aggressively rather than have a larger investment that I'm anxious and conservative about, because I put some stop losses in because I was like, I don't want to do it. And like, one of my stop losses like fired right at the bottom without me even knowing it. And then I just rebought like directly after that. Literally, I just like lit $1,000 on fire and burnt it by like rebuying one Bitcoin at $1,000 higher. I know that's stupid. Everyone would know that that's stupid. But I do think that when we talk about how much money we put in, it's easy to confuse that idea of going to zero, because when you're investing in the stock market, say Amazon, yeah, like, don't put in more money than you can afford to use. I have some news for people. Amazon is not going to zero. You know what I mean? Amazon is not going to take a 50% price dip in the next 2 months.
Well, I mean, it could. I mean,
it could, but the odds are astronomical.
It has before.
A 50% dip?
I mean, it certainly crashed back down. Like when it seemed like it was almost impossible for them to make a large profit given their prices, you know?
That's true.
And
it
really took like AWS like being unveiled as this massive success to really sort of supercharge them back up. So look, I mean, any of this stuff is, I don't know if it's 50%, but it was large.
Well, put it this way. If you have a diverse stock portfolio, you can take like a hit, but you're probably not going to go to zero.
Yeah.
I think that Bitcoin, you kind of have to be comfortable playing down and playing in that like negative realm and like keeping your strategy going. And it just seems like it's probably, has other parallels to poker, which is like you play in the lower stakes game so you can play like the game you want to play. Don't play in the game that's like in over your head and you're freaked out about the money.
Yeah. I think that's true. The only other thing that I would say is that it's just a question of, do you want to make more money so that you have more stability, or do you want your life to be changed? You know?
Sure.
And what a life-changing amount of money is, it's a contextual thing. It's for some people it's $15,000, and for some people it's $10 million, right?
Yeah.
And that if you are at a point where you feel like, I am never going to hit that spot of life-changing money, then that's when people sort of buy in too much. And I would say that, I'm pretty sympathetic to people who do that,
because, I am too.
Because I feel like at some point when you read the biographies, and they might be apocryphal, but of really rich people or people who have succeeded financially in a way that, you would want to succeed at, they all take that huge risk point. Like Haralabis Vulgaris, who I interviewed back when I was at Grantland and my book came out, like Bill let me do the BS report once, and all I did was talk to Haralabis for an hour.
Gosh, I didn't listen to that. I missed that one. That was before my BS report, listening to that.
And, Haralabis has told this story in other contexts, but, at some point he had, I think it was $70,000, and it was all the money he had in the world from working as a sky cap in an airport. And he put it all on the Lakers to win the championship. And, that was probably a very risky decision.
I thought that the story was going to have more dimensions than someone crazy degenned out, and it worked.
No. I mean, he said that he felt the Lakers were clearly the best team. He didn't understand why they were like basically a 10-1 to win the championship. It was like nowhere close to 10-1, and that he was fully confident the whole time.
Yeah.
But that's a huge risk he took.
Yeah, no, and I embrace that. And yeah. I actually like the idea of taking huge risk, and I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I actually am not saying, oh, I'm bummed that I overexposed myself. I'm just bummed that my overexposure led to shitty psychological fear that led me to play the game poorly. Because if I made a big bet and I played the game well, I'd feel okay losing it. The worst feeling it would be, I made a big bet and then I also like didn't play it well. That would be like if he bet the Lakers and it was like, oh God, I have too much on the Lakers. I'm going to borrow some money and hedge.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That's kind of what I've been doing.
Problem. Yeah. And then you lose all bets.
And then, and then like a dark horse wins and you lose the hedge and you lose it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I've played this. I'm going to toot our horn though here, Jay. One thing we did well, I think we've been pretty honest about this stuff.
Yeah.
I have not tried to overinflate my gains or soft pedal my losses. And I do think that there's a value, I hope, to the listeners and to people out there that like not everyone's going to tell you how this stuff really goes for them. And I think we've been trying to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And, I think that we have also tried at least, and perhaps it's something, maybe we're just blocked psychologically. So if we've been dishonest, maybe it's not even, you know, an intentional thing. But like, most of the decisions.
Wouldn't it be shocking if you found out that I didn't actually own any crypto ever?
Yeah, I would just not talk to you anymore. Like something's very wrong with Aaron. I feel like that even the good decisions that we've made sometimes are for specious reasons, and it sort of highlights how chaotic all of this is.
I think I was reacting to like Dan Bilzerian, noted poker player, was like, ooh, like real crypto bloodbath out there. Lucky I like sold out a few months ago. It's starting to look juicy again. Maybe I'll buy it. And people
said that?
Yeah, notably were like, you didn't tweet when you sold.
I
like,
might buy back in if Dan Bilzerian's back in.
Well, I was just like don't believe anyone who is like, I sold at the perfect time, but doesn't tell you that until like after the crash
exactly,
or whatever.
Yeah, agree.
Take anyone's take anyone's gains or losses with like a grain of salt. If you really want people to believe in it, you know, play with your hands up, say that you're selling. Because I feel like Dan Bilzerian was like tweeting about his like having Monero in his portfolio a couple of months ago. Like maybe he tweeted that and then immediately sold. But like it just seems like a lot of hindsight 2020 kind of stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
Cool. All right. Well, now that we're back at break even, I feel like we're like starting like a new season out here.
I know, season two.
That's a question I have for you. Are you just letting it like run forever, or are you going to like at some point kind of like sell out and like start over a new investment or something like that?
Well, look, I mean, I have sold almost all of my crypto.
You did this accidentally. Yeah. You did this.
So I have very little left. This past weekend, I was in Las Vegas for the NCAA tournament, and I was willing to lose more betting on college basketball teams that I've never seen play and couldn't name it than I have in crypto right now. You know, I've been thinking about it just like, I think that I will wait until there is something that feels like real blood in the water. And this crashed down to 7,500 from like, I guess it was what, like at 11,000?
Yeah.
It didn't feel like blood in the water to me. Like,
really?
I think it needed to be sub 5 for me to feel like it was real blood
in
the water.
That's some bloody water.
So that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for sub 5 and then I'll think about
it. That's like, there's like more blood and sharks in the water than water in the water. Unfortunately, like I would love to have be sold out for a while so I could root for a crash with you, but I'd like to get back up to a break even. I'm like close to break even now. I'm not quite there. Fear once I hit break even, I think I'm going to maybe sell off all my alts, like literally consolidate my Bitcoin back to Coinbase because it's like all over the place. Someone's been trying to fucking break into my Cryptopia account. I've been getting password resets. If that's a listener to the show, I will find you. I will hunt you down.
No, you won't.
But that's going to require liquidating my sumo bag and resigning my title as a feudal lord, which it's almost worthless now. So yeah, it's almost
you're
like...
You're on barren lands right now.
No, I mean, like basically, like, it would be kind of like a great to put on the tombstone of my Cryptopia investments that I got hacked because... It would kind of let me off the hook a little bit if I could just write that one off.
It's not your fault.
But get back all to Bitcoin and then maybe kind of start over for zero again. And I think this time I'm going to be really conscious about my average buy. I'm going to try to say, like, this is my average buy. All I want to do is do well percentage-wise relative to that buy. Don't worry about too much about how much money you have in or, like, what that is. Like, just try and play this like a sport and say, like, if I can do X percentage based on my original buy, I'll feel good about that.
Well, that sounds good.
All right, cool. Well, see you next week.
See you next week.
This episode was taped Monday, March 19th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,498.
That was Coin Talk. Thanks very much to our editor, James Nicholson. Thanks to my co-host, Jay Kang. Thanks to our partners over at Medium. You can find us at medium.com/cointalk if you feel like reading any transcripts of any episodes. I think the interviews, like we had last episode was with Adrian Jeffries. I like to read the transcript of an interview. I think it's a good format. So check those out. Send us an email at hi@cointalk.show. Thanks for listening and see you soon.